We are on Vav Amud Aleph, and last time we spent considerable time trying to understand what was going on with Barzutra and Ravashi. I believe, an easier way to look at it. Again, the discussion in the Gemara was about non-Jews handling a body of someone who passes away on the first day of Yom Tov, or Jews handling on the second day of Yom Tov. And Barzutra said, we only do this if the body has waited a day, but we didn't know what this was. And Ravashi said, no, even if death was that day. And we didn't know which day he was talking about either. So last time, the way that I presented it was three different views, or Zerua, Rosh, and Ran, based on the way they read the Gemara, and how that led to their conclusions. But I want to do it in a little bit of a different way, because I think it'll make it more clear. Fundamentally, what's the reason to say that you can have a non-Jew do the burial on the first day of Yom Tov? Kavod Hames, right? Kavod Hames, Kavod Habrios, whether those are the same thing or not, we don't need to go into right now. But it's about kavod for the body, and asking a non-Jew is fundamentally a derabanan. Right? Asking a non-Jew to do it is a derabanan. So therefore, you can override the derabanan of asking a non-Jew to take care of it in order to meet your obligation for the dignity of the person who passed away. Right? That's the fundamental idea on day one.
Is it a mitzvah to say to bury the mace?
Yes.
On that day?
Yes.
But not just cover of rias.
So the question is
a mitzvah to say,
but that's the reason.
And then a mitzvah lo to say.
Right. So the question that I would ask is, well, a couple of points. Number one is that the lo saseh on Yom Tov, if you're dealing with a deoraisa violation of Yom Tov, is a lo saseh with kares. So that will override the assay of burial. The other question is whether burial that's not on the first day fulfills the mitzvah of burial, and therefore, by waiting, even though it's not the ideal form, maybe you still fulfill the mitzvah. But that's Yom Tov Rishon's formula. Yes. So don't hang him on a gallows. Yes, it's true. That would indicate that the main mitzvah is that day, but I'm not sure that still that it's exclusively that day. I think we do assume that burial the next day fulfills kavura. The second day, right? What is your halachic calculation now that you're making? You have kavod habrios, right? Versus Yom Tov Sheni itself being this odd minhag.
Suffolk.
That we're doing. It's not suffolk anymore. It's minhag, whatever you want to call it, right? It's certainly not kedusha achas. That's not what we're dealing with. So, what the fundamental debate between the Or Zeruah, the Rosh, and the Ran is really a debate about one key point: whether you're dealing with Yom Tov Rishon or you're dealing with Yom Tov Sheni, it's about overriding a derabanan for the sake of the honor of this body. Right? The only thing that's changing is which derabanan it is. Is it derabanan that you're overriding Amir al-Hakum, day one? Or is it derabanan that you are overriding Yom Tov Sheni? Observing Yom Tov Sheni, correct. So, if you take a look at your table, the position taken by the Rush, I'm using the Rush in the middle line of the table first, because you'll see why. The Rosh says the machlokas between Marzutra and Rav Ashi applies to both the Rabbans. It's a fundamental debate regarding overriding a derabanan for the sake of kavod hames, in which Marzutra says you can only do that if you've already waited a day, because there's an extreme violation of kavod hames, because the body has already had to wait a day, and now you're going to push it off still further. Whereas Rav Ashi's position is no. Even if the person died that day, kavod hames will override the derabanan involved. Whether the derabanan is Amir al-Hakum on day one, or whether the derabanan is Yom Tov Sheni on day two. That's the position taken by the Rush. You follow?
Yeah.
The Rush says, fundamentally, it's a debate about kavod hames being overriding a derabanan. Then move to the top line. The Or Zeruah. The Or Zeruah says no. He says Marzutra and Rav Ashi are on the same page when it comes to the derabanan of Amir al-Hakum. they both agree that Amir al-Hakum is strong, and therefore, you can only override it in the event that the body has already waited. The debate that they have is regarding the Derabbanan of Yom Tov Sheni, where Marzutra says, yeah, Derabbanan of Yom Tov Sheni also is not strong. I'm sorry, also is strong, and therefore overrides the kavod issue, unless the body has already waited. And Rav Ashi disagrees, because Rav Ashi says, don't wait the Derabbanan of Yom Tov Sheni in the same way that you wait the Derabbanan of Amir al-Hakum. Amir al-Hakum, on day one, is a very strong Isser. Yom Tov Sheni on day two is not as strong an Isser in the eyes of Rav Ashi. And therefore Rav Ashi distinguishes, and Rav Ashi says on day one, I'm not going to let you bury unless the body has already delayed. On day two, I will let you bury immediately. That's the idea. The view of Rav Ashi, as understood by Lior Zarua, is that the Derabbanan of Yom Tov Sheni is more lenient than the Derabbanan of Amir al-Hakum.
How do they get into this? Like, where does the little meter come from?
Yes. So that's a good question. How do you make this kind of a calculation? And the answer is that Derabbanans have all sorts of levels. It's not true that all Derabbanans are created equal. A Derabbanan, for example, is considered more lenient if it has no biblical root. I think that came up in a Tosfos a while back. We talked about Muktzah not having a biblical root. And we said a Derabbanan that has no biblical root at all is going to be lighter than a Derabbanan that is, let's say, a Gezerah lest you do whatever biblical prohibition. So that will be one example of a distinction we would make. Here, Yom Tov Sheni isn't even a Derabbanan. Yom Tov Sheni is a Minhag. Right? The Rabbanan came along and said, be careful with the practice of your ancestors. It doesn't quite even have normal Derabbanan status. And therefore, Rav Ashi will be more lenient with that than he will be with Amir al-Hakum. Amir al-Hakum is also sometimes considered to be more lenient than other Derabbanans. Because Amir al-Hakum is a case in which it's not even a Jew doing it. It's a non-Jew doing the malacha. So we have precedent for making these sorts of distinctions among the Rabbanans.
So if somebody dies Erev Yom Tov,
yeah,
you can't bury him Erev Yom Tov because it was too late in the day.
Right.
What happens the next day?
So that's exactly
that. Everybody agree that he gets buried right away?
So according to the Or Zeruah, everybody will agree bury on Yom Tov Rishon.
Right.
Right?
Delay.
Everybody says that because the body's already waited.
Right.
According to the Rosh, Marzutra will say you can bury, and Rav Ashi goes, actually everybody, yes.
Yeah.
Down the line, they're all going to say, because
yeah,
either
they agree.
Right, because that's a case of delayed, which is lighter than the case of immediate, yes. So,
and would anybody hold that a Jew can bury them on first day Yom Tov in
no.
that circumstance?
No one ends up with a Jew doing the burial. We have to talk about that still. I think I mentioned it last week. The Sfasemes made that
say
point.
If there's no grave, that a Jew can do it?
I don't remember seeing that, no. The only thing that I do remember seeing was the Spas Emesis point, when the Rush made the argument that Kavod HaBrios should override Amir al-Hakum on day one. So the Spas Emes says, well, if that's true, then why can't I use a non-Jew to do burial on Shabbos? Why can't I use a non-Jew to do burial on Yom Kippur? And just say it's Amir al-Hakum.
So if there's no non-Jews?
Then they have to wait. They have to wait.
Well,
how does the Yerushalayim factor here?
Let's go ahead.
You take the body out of Yerushalayim? In terms of what?
I thought they buried
him. I'm not sure I understand your question. I'm talking about a case where you don't have a non-Jew available. You can't bury on Yom Tov Rishon. You know, Jews can't do the burial on Yom Tov Rishon.
So if somebody passes away, I don't want to project another issue, but somebody buried, passed away in Yerushalayim on the first day.
They have non-Jews do the burial. That's what I assumed goes on. I don't actually know, but that's what I would assume. Yeah.
What would be interesting is if somebody had holes from both days, like a brisker in Eretz Yisrael, can they use a Jew to do the burial on the second day?
If you hold it, sir.
For that. I mean, they hold.
I'm not familiar with the brisker position on this, so I don't know what they would say regarding.
You're talking about
regarding a Jew doing it on Yom Tov Sheni. I will be very surprised if
they
would.
They hold second day.
Yeah, well, you're talking about something entirely different. Yeah. You're talking about Yom Tov Sheni. What you're talking about is the separate question of what the outsider does in Eretz Yisrael, but he's not going to create a strict
outsider.
Ben Chutzlaretz.
No, he's talking about people who live there. They have 1.5 days.
But nonetheless, it's no stricter than Yom Tov Sheni is outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's not as though they're elevating Yom Tov Sheni to be a Yom Tov Rishon. All they're doing is saying, observe Yom Tov Sheni.
Yeah, so but I was saying, can they use somebody who doesn't observe Yom Tov Sheni? Like, in other words, somebody...
Why shouldn't they? They can do it themselves, but they can do it themselves.
Can they do it themselves?
Yes, they could do it themselves if they were living in Poland. Why can't they do it themselves if they're in Eretz Yisrael?
Yeah, it can't be any harder. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the position of the Ozerua. Again, the Rush is saying both the Rabbanans are equal. Amir La'akum, Kavan Abrios are the same, and therefore either your name is Marzutra, and you say the Kavan Abrios does not override these until the body's already weighted. Or you're a Ravashi, and you say, no, Kavod HaBrios overrides it right away. The Or Zeruah says, it's not true. He says the Amira La'akum one is actually very strong, and Kavod HaBrios can't override that according to anybody. The debate is only going to be about the lesser Derabanan of Yom Tov Sheni. That's only Minhag. That's the way the Or Zeruah is going
to
look at things. Whereas, according to the Ran, the Rhine, if you look at the bottom line, says that when it comes to Yom Tov Rishon, he's the same essentially as the Or Zeruah in principle. He just says that when it comes to Yom Tov Rishon, everybody agrees that Kavod HaBrios is strong enough to override Amira La'akum. When it comes to Yom Tov Sheni, that's where a machlokas ensues, because according to Marzutra, the derabbanon of Yom Tov Sheni is more lenient than the derabbanon of Amira La'akum. The Marzutra says that you can... according to the Ran, Marzutra and Rav Ashi agree regarding Amira La'akum on Yom Tov Rishon, that's lightweight.
Right.
And that can be overridden. When it comes to Yom Tov Sheni, and your Isser now is the Yom Tov Sheni de Rabbanan, Marzutra becomes more strict. He views the issue of Yom Tov Sheni as being more strict than the issue of Amira La'akum on Yom Tov Rishon. He'll take that more seriously than Amira La'akum.
Why?
Hang on. And Rav Ashi says, no, they're both the Rabbanans and they're both overridden. But the fundamental debate is looking at Amira La'akum on Yom Tov Rishon as being lesser than the minhag that is Yom Tov Sheni. So you look at me and you say, why? And I go back to what I said to you before. Right? The reason why is one of the ways that you can categorize different derabbanans is to say Amira La'akum is lightweight because fundamentally a Jew isn't doing anything wrong. It's the non-Jew who's actually doing it. All that you did was you asked the non-Jew to please do the malacha on your behalf.
There's no benefit issue.
There's no benefit issue, no.
And a second day Yom Tov? I don't quite understand that. Why does Marzutra say going to run the second day?
Because he's gonna view that as a very serious...
So he wants to make a more strict thing because it's Yom Tov Sheni, because people will not... Something like
so we don't know.
But we don't know.
That doesn't seem to be an issue vis-a-vis...
On the second day, it's still a goal. You're still doing it. I mean, reflect.
On the second day, you're doing it yourself.
You're doing it yourself.
And don't forget, the second day, we're still talking about the guy dying on the first day.
Right, but if the guy dies on the first day...
According to Marzutra, Rav Ashi says, no, Rav Ashi says, I can bury him even...
So if the guy dies on the second day... If the guy, according to Ran, died on the second day, Yom Tov, then he can't bury him.
According to Marzutra, we're not doing the burial. That's correct.
Right.
Unless the only case you would be if there was a prospective delay, if the next day is Shabbos.
Right. Okay.
So then you would be allowed to do it in order to avoid the eventual.
But according to Marzutra, you just mark me on the second day.
But going back to
you make the point that the second day of Yom Tov is really, there's no connection. Either I said that you could find it. So why does it have any standing to stop the
period? I said that would be a category of
lesser.
When you're dealing with Yom Tov Sheni, you do have a Del Reisa root to it, meaning the whole thing goes back to a practice that we did because of concern for the calendar. It's just that at this stage, what we're talking about is fundamentally a minhag.
Right, so why would a minhag?
Why would a minhag? Go through the question. Why would a minhag
override the requirement? Oh, because the day had passed already? To bury the person?
No. The reason the minhag is stronger is fundamentally because a Jew is doing the forbidden malacha, as opposed to Amir la'akum, where it's a non-Jew is doing it.
But the Jews, maybe I misunderstood you. I thought you said that the second day of Yom Tov, there's no.
According to my Zuki, there's another reason why.
What you're looking for is something that isn't as simple as we would like it to be. What you're looking for is the chart that says this outranks that.
Right.
But it's not that simple because it's subject to machlokas.
Okay, so there's...
Yeah, and that's what we're seeing here. Effectively, what we're seeing is that according to the Or Zeruah, right, the Or Zeruah within Rav Ashi says that Yom Tov Sheni is more lenient than Amir La'akum, whereas the Ran, reading Mar Zutra, says that Yom Tov Sheni is more strict than Amir La'akum. But that's another way to look at this. The last week, when we looked at this, we built up the case for each one based on the root in the Gemara. And in our case, and in the Gemara with the Rabbi Yochanan Mitzakeh, and what they did with the body, and so on, what we're doing here is looking at it from a different perspective. And I hope it's a clearer perspective, or a simpler perspective. The fundamental debate is, how do I weight my derabanans that are going up against Kavod HaBrios? According to the Rosh, all the Rabbanans, at least those involved in this story, are created equal. According to the Or Zeruah, the Rabbanan of Amir La'akum is more strict than the Rabbanan of Yom Tov Sheni. And according to the Ran, the Rabbanan of Yom Tov Sheni is more strict than Amir La'akum. That's fundamentally the way that we're presenting this. So we're taking the three different possibilities. I mean, there are no other possibilities. The only other possibility, hypothetically, would be if someone wanted to argue that neither will override Kavod HaMeis. But that's not a legitimate position, because we've already seen that there is this idea of doing the burial. The only question is, does it wait a day, not wait a day? But we don't have a position of saying that everybody says you have to wait until a body has already waited.
That's a question.
Yeah.
And if it's going to take more than 30 seconds... You can't have anybody work for you on Shabbos, not your animals, not your servants.
Mm. Good. So
that's a deraisa.
There are two different, well, really three different isurim. Okay. One isur, which I want to get out of the way, is the isur of having your eved or your animal work for you, as explicitly mentioned in the Torah. This isn't your eved and this isn't your animal. This is some guy somewhere.
Contract.
Yes. So that one is out of the picture.
Okay.
There's a second issue, which is Maisa Shabbos. I am not allowed to benefit from work that someone does for me on Shabbos. So the classic example, I am on a boat, and somebody builds a bridge so I can get off the boat. I'm not allowed to go down the gangplank because he did it just for me.
Why I can't eat something that somebody cooked on Shabbos?
Correct.
If they had me in mind.
Or potentially even not if it's a Jew. But I'm dealing with a non-Jew case.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. The classic case, I'm sitting in the room, it's dark, the non-Jew comes in, turns on a light for me and leaves. I can't read by that light because he did it just for me. If they turn on the light because they want to sit down and read, that's a different story. But if it's just for me, then it's a problem. I can't benefit. But here I'm not benefiting from what they're doing.
Well, you are, because your mace is now being buried.
And therefore I am benefiting how? It's all intentional.
You don't have to do it.
Right, but mitzvah slav lehenos neinu. That's not called benefit. The fact that he discharged my mitzvah isn't an issue. The third one is Amir la'akum, but I can't tell him to do it.
So it's a benichile type of thing.
I mean, we use nichole lanichole. It's not. It doesn't even need to go there. It's simply that I didn't benefit from the deed. I benefited in an intangible way, but not in any substantive way, like we talked about when you're reading by the light, because you didn't have a light without it.
Like, I don't want to go further into this, but based on what you just said, if, forgive me, if the janitor goes into the base saturation,
yes,
into the clicks on the light from the photon,
that's a problem.
But that happens all the time.
Okay, I wasn't going to make that
accurate. So the heter that I'm familiar with, without talking about who likes it, who doesn't like it, and where it's applied. But the answer that I'm familiar with is that if somebody has a job, that every day, let's say, the case where I first heard about this was I asked the question of a camp rabbi, where I knew that the non-Jewish employees in the camp were going into various, you know, public buildings on Shabbos morning and turning on all the lights that everybody was then going to use in the course of the day. So the camp rabbi's answer was to quote to me a leniency where that's his job. Every morning he goes in and he turns on the lights in these rooms, and so therefore on Shabbos also he goes in and does it. You're not telling him do this on Shabbos. This is his job every day. He does it on a Tuesday also. I'm not sure how that would figure into the case where it's Shabbos Mincha.
Well, he's an undertaker. That's his job.
Well, he was talking lights.
No, no, no. Sure.
Caretaker. A caretaker, you gave that to Muriel.
Forgive me, to be blunt, say in a certain room it gets very warm on Shabbos, and a certain janitor might come in, or somebody goes to him and says, Ted, it's warm in that room.
Ted, for example, pulling a name out of a hat.
But just came to me and goes and speaks to the thermostat.
I mean, for main shul, every Shabbos, if it gets warm, it's...
It depends on two things. Number one, is someone asking him to do it, which is an Amir Lahakum problem. And number two, is he doing it for himself, or is he doing it for you, which would be the benefit from that which he does for you on Shabbos. All further questions in this regard should be referred to the shul rabbi, whose headache this is.
Sorry, I didn't mean to.
That's all right.
Sorry.
Okay. But that's in terms of revisiting the three-way machlokas. It's fundamentally a debate about how we look at these derabbanans. Did we read this ritva last time? I couldn't remember. The ritva that's in Source Aleph about just how far you're allowed to go with things on Yom Tov, going outside of Tchum, bringing stuff back. We did read that. Okay. And I made reference last time to the tshuva of Rav Kook in Source Beis. But first we have to see a Tosfos. If you take a look in your Gemara, it's a Tosfos v'ha Idna.
I think we did that,
right? No, we didn't. We did the line in the Gemara. We didn't see the Tosfos. The Ravina had said that nowadays we don't do the burial on Yom Tov Sheni because we have Chavri. And we read the Rashi, who explained that Chavri are these people who normally would force the Jews to work for them, but they would let the Jews go for Yom Tov. But if they see that you can bury, then they're going to say, oh, so you can do my work also. So Tosfos says, he quotes Rashi, Pirish Rashi, Shekofen Leisar Lasas Malacha, Kshu Yom Tov, Menichem Osam, they force the Jews to do their Malacha, but when it's Yom Tov, they let him be. Vim HaYiroin Sheyikru Meisehem, Yechufu Osam Lasas Malacha, but if they see that the Jews bury their dead, then they'll compel the Jews to do their Malacha too. Vahashta, so he says, and now, Bizman Hazeh, in our day, She'ein Chavri, we don't have these Chavri among us, Mutter, so you'd be allowed to do the burial again. This is yet another in the set of cases where Tosfos discusses a decree that no longer has relevance. He says, don't tell me that because it was usur, because of the Chavri, now you need a Beis Din to convene and repeal that gezera. Since the reason for the gezera was out of concern for the Chavri, we're no longer concerned for the Chavri, the gezera falls apart. And he said it's the same issue regarding water that's left uncovered. That's also because maybe a serpent drank from it. He says nowadays we don't have serpents among us, and therefore we drink even though that was something that was actually decreed.
Everybody holds to that, though.
But Tosfos does. This is Tosfos Ashita, right? This is what we've talked about regarding the clap. We've dealt with this a number of times. Umikal Makom, however, he says, having said that it should be mutter now to do the burial on Yom Tov Sheni because we don't have any chavri. Rabbeinu Tam haya oser. Rabbeinu Tam still prohibited it. He doesn't say why yet, but now we'll see. Umaisa haya be someplace, Milun, Milwan, Milan, I don't know. But there was a place where this happened. Shemes adam echad be Yom Tov Sheni. Someone passed away on the second day of Yom Tov. V'ratzulis asek b'lekovro, and they wanted to bury him. V'gar b'hen Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam, on the scene, rebuked them. V'shalachlem, and he sent them the following statement, which is a Gemara in Shabbos. B'nei Bashchar enon b'nei Torah, v'atem b'nei Torah. The people of Bashchar are not people of Torah, and you are people of Torah. K'disa b'Shabbos. What does that mean? Shalolik bormeis b'yom tov sheni mishum delav b'nei taraninu v'asi lezolzulei bei. The problem is that the people you are living among are not people of Torah. And if you are going to bury on Yom Tov Sheni, they're going to say, oh, we, I guess we don't really need to take Yom Tov Sheni that seriously. The, we can do all sorts of stuff. That's the concern.
Foreseeing what was happening in the world many centuries later.
Or it was happening in the world of his own day.
Right. But I'm just saying.
Yeah. Right. Aval Hari Omar, De'ein ze Dimyon. But the Reed disagrees, and he says, there's no comparison between the Gemara and Shabbos and the Levaya case. De'ein harbe devar mashkachna de'ein on b'nei Torah. K'de'isa b'yevamos chazinu de'ka'achli tormuz de'shalki nachrim bo'asar lehem. He says, there are many cases where we find that the population are not learned people. He quotes you a Gemara in Yevamos, where one of the Chachamim saw that the people were eating beans that had been cooked by non-Jews. Tormos beans. Tormos beans are not edible raw. They have to be cooked 7 times in order for them to be edible. The translation for tormos usually is lupine.
Lupini beans.
Okay, lupini beans. Lupine is the way they're spelled at any rate. Yeah. They're a very tough bean. They're not edible raw.
Right.
And so he says, that they saw the Jews were eating them as bishul akum, va'asalam, and he prohibited it for them. Ubarchina, and they asked, well, wait a minute, va'nechal k'mo shuchai, v'chol shunechal k'mo shuchai, ein bo mishum bishulei nachrim. They make the argument that no, it actually is edible raw. I'm not sure how that squares with the Gemara elsewhere that Thomas is not, but okay. He says it is edible raw, and therefore it's not subject to bishul akum. Umeshani, and they answer there, shalo hayu b'nei Torah. You're right. Technically, it's not bishul akum, but he prohibited it because they're doing this. They're going to do other things also because they're not b'nei Torah. They're not learned people. V'anu ein anu choshen b'davar zed dekaimalan dechol shu nechal k'mo shuchai ein mo mishum bishul enachrim. So the response to Rabbeinu Tam is, you know, here you have an example in the Gemara of one of the Chachamim prohibiting people from eating something that's mutter because otherwise they end up eating bishul akum. And we don't now apply that to all sorts of cases where we say things that are edible raw are mutter if a non-Jew cooks them. We don't prohibit the whole range of things. It's not because our people are b'nei Torah. It's because we don't do this. We don't ban things like this and say, well, people aren't learned. And therefore, his response to Rabbeinu Tam is that we should allow for the burial and not worry about what's going to happen. V'harav Rabbeinu Yechiel Omer Delo Dami. The second Baal HaTosfos who's being quoted says, don't compare the funeral case to the Bishul Akum case. Meaning, I could see that in the Bishul Akum case, you're going to say, in the Bishul Akum case, we'll say, let them eat it. But in the funeral case, we will not let them bury. What's the difference? It's different over here. If someone's going to eat this in his own house, it's not a public thing. No one knows that he's eating the beans. But if you're going to do a public funeral, everyone sees that, and people will come to misunderstand. So that's the second point, is there's greater concern with this kind of a situation. And then third, Va'od Amar Rabbeinu Tam, Dibizman as a Nami Yesh Yehudim Shein Meshubad in the Malchus Lasas Malacha. He says, Rabbeinu Tam says, we may not have people named Chavri anymore, but we do have Jews who are impressed into servitude for the king, in our own day, the Kigon Lekabel Hamas, they have to be tax collectors, at least Asik Bitzarchayim, or take care of the needs of the government. Hilkachim Yerushis Asku Lazus Malacha Bemes, Yachuf Wosam Lazus Malacha Lamalchus. So there, if they see you can do a funeral, they'll see you can do other things also. So he says the concern really is still relevant. So Rabbeinu Tam does not like the idea of people doing the Levaya on Yom Tov Sheni.
So he challenges Rashi, and at the end, he essentially comes back to the same type of argument as the Chavri argument.
But he doesn't challenge Rashi.
Well, he's not challenging. Rashi himself is only explaining what was done.
Yeah.
Rashi is explaining the Gemara. Rashi didn't say what's done in Troyeh. He's not dealing with that.
Tosis anonymously challenges Rashi, but Rabbeinu Tam agrees with Rashi with this. But what happened? But why doesn't he just simply say, and I assume because they're not available, just use a goy for the second yom tov, as opposed to saying, "Don't bury this person."
Do we know that he
bury this person?
No, maybe that's his answer. In other words, when it says Rabbeinu Tam Haya Oser, maybe Haya Oser means Haya Oser for a Jew to do it, but he would let them have a non-Jew do it. Mm-hmm. That could be. But that's the Tosfos. Two other points that I wanted to make sure to mention, or it's within one thing. Take a look on your sheets. It's always Gimel, please.
Okay, just
yeah.
If you held, going to your first table, if you held on the first day that Amirat Akum is stricter than second day Yontif.
Yeah.
Okay. On second day Yontif.
Using Amirat Akum.
Yes. Would you still hold that you can't do it because that's still stricter, or because it's second day it's irrelevant?
I would say it's logically going to be a lighter thing, because now what you're dealing with is a derabanan on a derabanan for the sake of a mitzvah.
But when they're saying something is stricter, are they saying something is stricter more like what Tosfot is saying now, that you're afraid of zilzul, and so it's to respect the concept? Or are they saying it's an actual stricter?
I think it's an actual stricter. I don't think it's just a zilzul issue. Tosfot is dealing with it from a separate perspective.
Okay, so here when it's saying that Yom Tov Sheni is stricter,
it means that it's actually stronger and it's not overridden in the halachic calculus.
Okay, yeah. So is there a scale of punishment if you violate these things? In order to see the other side of this?
Right, and the answer is no. That's the thing. The punishments are the same. It's not as clear-cut as when you're dealing with Del Reisa, Losa, say, where you have...
Like Yom Tov Sheni, according to Rabban, is excommunication. What does it mean, Reisa, La'akum?
Yom Tov Sheni, according to the Rambam, is excommunication. What does he say that?
I think so. He puts in line with other things of insulting a rabbi and some other...
Yeah, but why wouldn't that be for all the rabbanans?
I don't know. I'm asking.
I'd have to see the Rambam that you're quoting.
Okay, I'll have to try and remember.
Okay, so that's two things you owe me. That and what we were talking about before.
They're both probably at my coffee table, so...
Okay. He's a very learned coffee table.
Books in process.
What I wanted you to see is source Gimel. I talked about Bayes last time. That was the Rav Kook Tshuva about the Shochet in Allentown. But take a look at source Gimel. This is a classic question. Do you ever notice, if you go to a Levaya where the family or the people taking care of the burial are more observant, so they tend to insist on not only carrying the casket themselves, but doing the lowering into the grave also? Like they'll take over. Do you ever notice that?
Yeah,
they'll take over the lowering on the device and actually insist on doing it themselves. That's one type of practice. Another is to make sure to insist that only Jews be the ones to do the actual burial and not let the cemetery workers get involved at all. So all of that seems to go by the wayside when we talk about having a non-Jew do the burial for Yom Tov Sheni. Right? We just threw that out the window.
Right.
So take a look at Source Gimel, Rav Chana Wasserman, and it's Kovetz Shiurim. He says, Umehad de Kovrin Meis be Yom Tov al Yedei Nachrim. He says, the fact that you can bury with via non-Jews on Yom Tov, Vein Mamtinan ad Halayla le Kayem Mitzvahs Kibur al Yedei Yisrael, and we don't just say, well, wait till tonight, and then you'll have Jews do the burial. Muchach da Mitzvah Miskayem es Gam al Yedei Nachrim. So that must mean that the mitzvah is indeed fulfilled when a non-Jew does the burial. And we do not say in this issue that the non-Jew doesn't have the ability to We don't say, in this issue, the non-Jew does not have the ability to be your messenger, to be your proxy. There's no problem. V'chein would be your chametz, and same thing when it comes to destroying chametz. Muchuch me'rashi, rish perakol shah, da mitzvah miskayem, es ha'ideinach, or you could have a non-Jew destroy your chametz, and you fulfilled it just as much. Why? V'atam l'chol zeh, mishum deguf ha'mitzvah hi totza oz ha'ma'aseh v'lo ha'ma'aseh atzmo. The mitzvah is the result.
Right.
The mitzvah is not the action. However it works, if you made sure that the body was buried, you fulfilled your mitzvah. If you made sure that you had no chametz by the time Pesach rolled around, you fulfilled your mitzvah. It's not in the act where you would need to employ a proxy in order to fulfill it. V'teida, and he says, you know this. Shim kavru v'achakach geru chaya olistim b'kivro. If someone was buried, and then afterwards an animal dug him up, or a bandit dug him up. So then you'd have to bury the person a second time. So he says that proves...
That's almost like a second mate.
So the point is that if the mitzvah that I had was
bury
this person, then I fulfilled it. Why should I call him a second mate now? I did to him what I was supposed to do to him. But the answer is, I did it, because the end result is what's needed. It's not about the physical act of shoveling earth. It's about making sure that the body is buried. So that's the way the Rabbi Chanan looks at it. In which case the question comes up. So why is it that people are mocked that we should be the ones? I mean, we could do it the way that most of the world does burial, right? Which is to say, bring the body there, you put it, in the casket or whatever on the grave, and let the professional grave diggers be the ones to take care of it. Why do we insist on being the ones to do it? So the Ran in Source Dalid addresses this. He says, "Uda'amrinon yis'asku bo amamin." As far as the statement in the Gemara of "Let the non-Jews take care of it," "Igamanda amar didavka bikvuraso aval tiltulo muter ali dekikar otinok." He says, some say that what we mean there is that the non-Jew will do the burial, but in terms of carrying the body's mukta. So we'll allow it via the gruesome method of either kikar or tinok. I recommend kikar over tinok. Mm-hmm. What they're talking about here is, since the body is mukta, you can't move the body, so you bring something that is not mukta, that is significant, and then you're moving the body in order to move the thing that's on it. So they mention either a loaf of bread or a child. As I said, preferably loaf of bread. Also nami muteres. You put it on the bed with it. You're not putting it on the body. Also nami muteres. Kibes hillel. Damri mitoch shehutra hotza letzara. Hutra nami shelo letzara. As far as your eruv problem, there's no eruv, and now I'm transporting him, right, on Yom Tov. Nonetheless, we follow Beis Hillel. Beis Hillel says, since you are allowed to move things for the sake of need, you are also allowed to transport things if there isn't a need. The truth of the matter is that it's not quite true, as we'll see eventually in the Gemara. There has to be some level of need, but there is a level of need here, so that's okay. So I'm allowed to transport it on Yom Tov through the public domain. So I've gotten rid of that problem. V'ika manda asar. However, there's an alternative view which prohibits. V'lishna deis asku bo amamin hachi mashma. And the truth of the matter is, when we say yis asku bo amamin, it sounds like the non-Jew is doing everything. Not only the burial, but also the transport. Dimidilo amru yikberuo so amamin. It didn't say have them bury. Mashma dechol asakar v'yidei amamin dafka. It sounds like everything is going to be done by the non-Jews. She'ein kan kvodo shomeis, she'natir bo mishum kvodo klal, kevin she'sofo lis azek bo amamin. Because there's no concern that, hey, if the non-Jews are going to move the body, that diminishes his kavod. They're burying him already. So therefore, let the non-Jew do the whole thing anyway. The reason I quote this is twofold. Number one, it's interesting to see the discussion about what's happening at all the stages before the burial. But number two, in that last line, he slipped in the reason why we normally prefer to have Jews do it. It's a matter of kavod. It's a matter of kavod. We say we're taking care of the body, as opposed to saying, well, outsource it. You outsource things that are not that important to you. You take care of it yourself when it's something that matters. So that's the idea being expressed here by the Ran. The Gesher HaChayim brings that also. Basically, it's an issue of of Kavod, that that's our preference.
That's just a minhag at best.
That's just a minhag at best. What is a minhag at best?
Of actually having a Jew involved in the burial.
Why do you call it a minhag?
Well, why else would it be?
It's an expression of a value. I wouldn't call it a minhag.
I can do kavod ames by hiring a goy. That's kavod ames.
Why?
Because I engage somebody
right.
to properly bury a body.
Right, but kavod is not an
I say the tefillah over the body. That's kavod ames.
But kavod is not binary. There's no end to what you can do for kavod. In other words, it is one level of kavod in the same way. Kibud av ha'em. Right? So kibud av ha'em is, as the Gemara words it, you give him food, you give him something to drink, you escort him places, right? That's kavod. So you can do that minimally, or you can do it to a greater extent.
So I can buy a $10,000 coffin and bury him in a coffin worth $10,000, and that's kavod.
Except that Rabbi Gamliel doesn't approve.
Okay, but...
But yes, that's exactly
extreme.
Right.
I can do anything.
But that's true.
I can put a 20-foot tombstone on top of it, and that's kavod.
Hypothetically, yes. Assuming that they would be embarrassed by it, but yeah. That's exactly the point.
Sounds like a fallacious argument to me.
No, I think that's exactly the point. Kavod is a matter of scale. You can do less kavod, you can do more kavod. And that's why even people who will insist Jews have to be the ones to do everything will recognize at a certain point that they can't. So for example, if it's 20 degrees below outside and the ground is hard as a rock, they're not going to stand there insisting we're going to shovel every last bit of earth onto it. At a certain point, you say, I can't do this. But all other things being equal, you say, okay, so we'll be the ones to take care of it. That's the idea. Kavod is not something that's binary. Okay.
What about the concept of hiring these criers at a funeral that they used to do? Is that also kavod?
Why wouldn't it be?
I'm just asking.
Yeah, I mean, ostensibly that's why they did it. Right? Why else would they do it?
I guess so.
I would assume,
they
yeah.
Or
was praying us for some people who needed to pray us.
Perhaps that too. All right. I think at this point then we'll have to pick up with...
Chicks.
Well, no, before chicks we stop to... There's a little bit of air of Tavshilin stuck in the middle. It's sort of just stuck there appended to the discussion about the second day of Rosh Hashanah, and then we move on from the egg to the chick. Okay? Sure.